Today, we're going to learn about the structure of a Lie group. And the outline is really the structure of the Lie group. Something called the structure constants you probably heard about. And then after that, we'll see something called the adjoint representation. Okay. So what do we mean by structure of Lie group? What do we know that we'll claim, okay, we know the structure of the Lie group, then we can do everything. Okay, so recall that the last time we learned about Lie groups, and Lie groups is really just saying that it can see a group that consists of elements that depends on some continuous parameter, real parameters. Let's call it phi 1, phi n. So n is the number of free parameters. Real. Okay. Then I'm tired of writing them again. I'll just make a tilde says that if there is a tilde, it's such a array or list of things. I'm a little reluctant to call them vectors because I'm not sure if they're in the vector space, if they're just random parameters in the Lie group. So this will be one element, G, in some Lie group, some general Lie group, that it depends on such a tuple or array of parameters. Okay, let me establish more notation. Is that I'll denote G alpha as defined to be G defined on some particular tuple. So the sub index is really referring different parameter in this tuple. And the upper index is just a label because I just cannot come up with an array of things that all sort of look like a verified, but they look somewhat different to denote different tuples. So this is just a label. It says that if I say this and then phi beta, that's just two different tuples. These things, for example, they don't run. So if I say phi I, then we know I runs from 1 to n. That's different real parameters. If I have an upper index, it doesn't mean anything. It's just one particular tuple. So I could label them with smiling face. It will be different from the frowning face, different from the, you know, sticking a tongue out face. Okay, the upper index is just a label. It does not run. Oh, you know, if to my like, I'll use Chinese. I'll use like 1, 2, 3. Then you wonder, how do Chinese write 1,000? Do we just like, ask me after class. We don't write, you know, 10 billion like this. But anyway, let's stick back with the Greek letters. But these Greek letters on the upper index, they are just a label. Okay, just a label. Okay, now we establish the notation. What do we mean by structure of the Lie group? The structure of Lie group means, say I have an element of G alpha and another element of G beta. Well, of course, it's a group, so it should equal to another element that it, some other element, some other label, see? Okay, so this is G depends on some tuplet phi tilde alpha, and this is the G element depends on some tuplet beta, and then this is some tuplet gamma. And now, the thing is, what I'm claiming is that this tuplet gamma must be some function, which is also tuple or array, and it's a function of the other two arrays. It makes sense because the group multiplication is deterministic. Given me two elements, there must be some connection between how do I find the third element. So this gives me a recipe to find the third element if I know this function. So this is our structure of the Lie group. If I can somehow find this F tilde, then we would know everything about the Lie group and we claim we are done. And can do whatever we want. Well, what do we know about this 5F tilde? Well, let's make some trivial and enlightening observation. You might not be enlightened at this point, but later we will be enlightened. Okay, trivial and enlightening observations. First, suppose I want to find a function when the arguments are all zero. So remember what this function do. It really establish how to map two group elements to the third. And if the first guy, the parameter is all zero, so that's identity. The second guy is still identity, and this should just be identity. This is the definition of identity. So the first trivial observation is that if we have two parameters, they are all just zero, array of zeros. Then you go to array of zeros, given by E times E equals E. Okay. Second, suppose, well, what's the chance I want to map identity to identity? But it's possible only one of them is zero, and the other guy, who knows? It's a tuplet. So what does this guy do? The same thing. This guy map the group element G of zero, which is E. And the G of this guy, by definition, it's denoted as G with a label beta. Well, since there's still identity, we happily denote this must go back to G beta, which means the function with a tilde, if one of the element is zero, it doesn't do anything. You give me an array, we map back to that array provided the other guy is zero. And of course, by symmetry, I shouldn't be discriminating which guy is in front. This guy should also give back to itself. Right? We're clear? Trivial and enlightening observation, we'll come back to this. Can move on? Okay, then what do we do? Now we know, well, to be honest, we know a measure zero set of what we want to know. Well, still, progress, but measure zero. Okay, let's try to make more progress by using what we talked about last time, is that what kind of groups we know the most? Matrices, because matrices, we can use Mathematica, we can use we know a lot of things about matrices. So instead of consider this group equation, we say, well, let's just take a unitary representation of it and consider U of G alpha, literally multiply in the matrix sense, U of G beta, this guy should equal to U of G gamma. And G alpha, remember it depends on the array phi alpha. And G beta depends on the array phi beta. And G gamma depends on the function. Okay, we got a matrix multiplication. These are supposedly unitary representation. Okay, what do we do now? Yep. Huh? The second line, what?
Of a representation.
Right. The second line is just saying G alpha is a group element depends on this. It's like U depends on the group element, the group element depends on the tuplet, so the matrix U should be also depends on the parameters.
Sure, but I mean, the terms that you wrote is like you're identifying G alpha with its
coordinates.
Like coordinates.
No, we're not. This is really saying you can say F is a function of G, G is a function of X, but I can still say F is a function of X. It's like the function composite. So I'm just saying this matrix eventually still just depend on these areas of parameters. No, I'm not identifying the area of parameters with the group element. So is it clear? That as long as I understand this, when I would understand all the matrix representation of this curious, mysterious function f, and that will be done. Because at this point, I don't care about the ones with matrix representations. Those are most useful in physics anyway. OK, so this is what I'm trying to do. So now they are matrix. What's the next step? So if we have problem, and think about it, they are unitary matrix, and we pick unitary matrix because they are closely connected to identity. What do we do if we are in trouble? Taylor expansion, yeah. Let's do that. Very good. We're close to, that's why we want to be stay close to identity, and we're just going to, let's focus on the vicinity of identity and claim now at this point, I only care about the tuplet if it's some epsilon tuplet and epsilons are all very small. Okay, let's stay close with identity. And then do Taylor expansion. Okay, Taylor expansion, the matrix. What we get is a U of this, epsilon, which we like. Let's just expand. It says, let's take M by M matrix. So the first entry is the identity. And the next entry would be I epsilon. And now there is actually a real lower index saying I'm going through all these parameters. And then who knows what I'm going to expand by, but I'll call them, well, let's use the lowercase t because the uppercase is reserved. OK, well, that's a fine enough Taylor expansion. OK. This point, let me say it's a matrix expansion, so this is the identity. This is, something that these guys actually call the generators for the following reason. They generate the group. Because if I could do this, so this is really just a Taylor expansion, this is the x, and this I is chosen for some like nice physics reason, then you get some nice properties later. Well, we'll come back. But this I is just a choice. You can totally choose this I to be one. But then you will have all the different convention with everybody else. OK. So we can always expand like this. And these are called generators because suppose I know what happens. Well, at this point, we don't. But suppose we know what happens at the vicinity of 1, then what I could do is now I take something not so close to the identity, and then we're just claiming we're going to do this crazy number of time. Let's drop to the matrix index, and then take an infinitesimal one from the finite one, take lots of them, and take n goes to infinity. So we claim anything is not so close to identity. You can always chop this not so close thing, chop them to be infinite apart. then they will be close enough, and then you're just going to do this infinitesimal transformation n times, then we'll take n to infinity. For a good reason, I'm going to call this e to the I phi t, because that the natural number e can be defined as the limit of some 1 plus 1 over n to the n. Okay, so this is just the definition of this exponential process. So what are we trying to say is, it's good enough if we only study the vicinity of the identity, because all the rest can be generated by the generators anyway. And there's all the subtleties, you know, you're multiplying. Remember, these are all matrices, so this whole thing is really complicated to do, but in principle, we can do it. Well, as long as I know it's in principle doable, I'm happy. Okay, so very good. So then we don't have the fear that what if we only understand things at the vicinity of the identity. We can focus on this expansion. What can we do now? The first thing we can do is, well, we know this thing is unitary. We can choose a unitary representation because it's close to identity and such. And then unitary give us the following condition, right? That's the unitary condition. And then we get identity plus minus, because the I epsilon A, TA is a matrix, and the other guy is just the same without the adjoint, and this gives me identity. So the only thing I'm doing is that I expand my unitary representation close to identity, and I'm going to use this expansion to say, what can we learn about the generators? Okay, so then I can expand, says this is identity minus I epsilon A TA dagger plus I epsilon A TA plus some other epsilon square term, I don't care. And then if you look at this part, epsilon A, I mean, it's some parameters, in principle, it should work for any parameters, so I can just drop them out. So this cancels. And I can drop the epsilon, I can even drop the I. It really tells us TA equals TA dagger. So these are Hermitian, or self-joint. In physics, says we are observables. Well, the generators of a Lie group are actually observables, which is nice, coming back to physics. Okay, are we clear? Linear expansion, we already achieved something. We find our generators are Hermitian. Yes?
Is there only going to be a case
that we deal with groups with real parameters? Well, even if they have complex parameters, remember, we only count the real ones. Like, you can have a UN, but you can still count how many real parameters there is. So SUN would have n squared minus 1 real parameters. I mean, if it's complex parameter, you can still say it's A plus BI, so you just count two of them.
Sure, okay.
So you can always count the real parameters. Okay, because if you keep track, they are also complex, then you have too many stars to keep track of, then. Yeah, exactly. So, but you can always choose to expand in terms of the real parameters such that you can get nice results that the generators are Hermitian. Okay? Are you with me? Very good. See, as I said, right, we did the first order. So the next step is do second order, right? Okay, second order expansion. So instead of this, what I'm going to try to do is expand yet another one. I'll just remember these are matrices. I'll drop the M by M thing. And there's this LAB showing up. And don't worry about them. I'll let you know why we shouldn't worry about them. But nevertheless, here we go. We have a second order expansion. And now, remember our noble goal is to this guy, to find what's F tilde. This is really a crazy task to do it for anything. And it seems still crazy even if you expand to second order. It almost seems mission impossible. But as a physicist, you should say challenge accepted. We're going to do it. All right, so look at that thing. We can already expand the left side in second order, but we still have to expand this guy in second order. OK, this guy is actually quite long, so let me use a new board. But let's just naively say, forget about all the groups. What I'm going to do is expand F as an array function of two arrays or two lists. So this is what I'm trying to do. Even just forget about we're dealing with groups, can say that let's wonder what each component could equal. So first, there could be something has nothing to do with your parameters. And then second, you could have something has to do with your first parameter. And then you can have something to do with your second parameter. So that's a linear expansion. And then you could have something to do with both parameter. And then the second order, actually, you could have something depends on only the first guy. And then you could have only depend on the second guy. Right? And this is the honest second order expansion. Yes.
Why did you like expand F over the first?
Oh, because at this point the only thing I'm using is U dagger U equals one. So I haven't used the fact I'm going to map two elements into a third element. This time I'm only using G has a inverse that equals identity. So if you only care about one element, not caring about one, two, three elements, then I can be happy and forget about this F tilde. But remember, our goal today is to get F tilde. So this is something what Freddy says, let's tame this beast. Yes, very good. It has a daunting number of free parameters. But, there is the enlightening observation. Okay, first, let's see what's the first enlightening observation tell us. It says if there's parameter is zero, then it should equal zero. So our first observation is, no, it has to depend on your parameter. There is no this constant independent part. This is our first observation. Right? Are you with me? Okay. Yeah. Yes.
So, but F should also be a truthful.
Yeah.
Why do we choose A and not some Greek letter? So that should be a Greek letter, right? Because
it's
probably algebraic
index. No, that's why I chose at the beginning. The sub index is like I or.
Yeah, but I mean, isn't the F just a shorthand for a truthful combination of bias? I mean,
yeah. No, F,
so,
yeah.
So,
Yeah. No. So it will end up with phi tilde alpha, and that is a tilde equation. It really means, so OK, let's clear this up, because I'm going to use that enlightening observation. So this is equivalent to saying every single element of tilde is equals to every of that. Well, you can see that if I try to write this without the index, it could be very compact, but hard to come up with. Okay, so our first enlightening observation is I don't need this term. Whew, that's good. And then what you say is you can set one of them to be zero and only keep one of them. Okay, should I have to write them as infinitesimal because we're doing expansion? Okay, just assume these guys are infinitesimal. Okay, so but if you take the first guy equals zero, you're really only left with this guy. And no, not that guy. And the last guy. Right? Because you kill one of them to be zero. And according to our enlightening observation, this really should just give me whatever I put in. If I put in this, I should get this back. Now we can compare. What it tells us is there is no second order term. Because when we make the observation, we never thought about it's infinitesimal. It should work for anything. This is really literally equals to itself. There is no second order. That's what we make the observation. Okay. And next thing you want to say is CBA is really just Kronecker term. It's not even linear combination. No, it's just itself. Okay, are you with me? And then by symmetry, the other guy should just give me that BA is also just Kronecker, and then we can kill E as well. Okay. Ta-da, ta-da, and that's just Kronecker. That looks much nicer. So what do we cut? What we end up with is that this function, which looks like a beast before, and turn out to be lesser beast, and it has one of this BCA thing that we should figure out what happens to this guy. So that's our second order expansion for F tilde. It turned out to be not so bad so after all. It has three terms, two terms are already determined. It really has this one free term. Okay. So at this point, I'll take a deep breath because we're gonna together do this second order expansion. It's gonna be a slightly longer derivation than I have ever done in this class so far. And it's probably also longer than the ones we're going to done after today. But I promise we'll have fruitful results. Okay. So let's put what we need together and combine these monsters and see what do we get. But now we're happy, right? Like F tilde is really just depend on this D BCA things, and if I figure out what happens to this D BCA things, then I'm done. So there is a hope. And now it's like the dawn, dark before the dawn, that we have to go through this. All right, let's put this together. Remember what we wanted to do is after we took the matrix representation, we have this guy times this guy equals this guy, which is F tilde, which is a function of the other two parameters. We have this. So what we want to do is to ask, in order for these matrices form a group, what constraints or what equation properties we can get out of that D thing. Okay. Let's expand this. So there is left-hand side. So second order expansion, we have 1 plus I epsilon A T A plus 1/2 epsilon A epsilon B L A B multiplied by 1 plus I epsilon, let's call it something else, epsilon c, epsilon d, L C D. Okay. Well, the left-hand side is not that bad. The first term you get a 1, and then you get this I epsilon A T A. And then you have I epsilon A T A. I rename my dummy index to be A again once it's not confusing. Wait, I have a problem. I need to label my epsilons. Thank you. That makes a lot of sense because I'm trying to map two parameters into a third one. That's why I come up with my smiling face and notation and such. Okay, let's keep them labeled. And this, what do we get? And then we get the middle term multiplied together, which gives us a minus sign, epsilon A, epsilon B, T A, T B, label alpha beta. And then we just get the other two terms multiplied by 1. And I rename my index whenever it's not confusing anymore. So this is what we have. It's really just multiply this, multiply this, multiply this, multiply this, multiply this, multiply this. And then we happily conclude that everything else is a third order that we don't care at this point. Okay. Well, halfway done, right? This is left. Let's see what the right-hand side gave me. Are you with me? It's clear left-hand side should have gave some crazy long things, expressions like that. It's really just what you learned from like sixth grade or so, that 1 plus x times 1 plus y, and you can open the parentheses. There's nothing fancy here. I'm just opening parentheses. And then I get all these things because our expression is sort of long. OK? Yes, question? Oh, very good. I just renamed them A and B because they are dummy indexes. I'm summing over C and D anyway. So if I call the dummy index A or B or C or D, it doesn't matter. I can write it as C and D, C, D, that'll be the same. I'm just renaming index. Whenever I say dummy indexes, I can always feel free to rename them because they're going to get summed over. Okay. Good. Halfway. All right. Let's see the other half. So the right-hand side is expand this guy. So it's like only one of them, except each parameter is some long things like that one. But we can do it. Challenges are what we want. All right, so instead of epsilon, I would put epsilon A alpha plus epsilon B beta plus D. Oh, hey, very good. Thank you. And oh, let me just look at it. I have it over there. So it's B, C, A, epsilon, epsilon, B, C, alpha, beta. And this guy, if you sum over all the dummy indexes, you should say that they leave us with A that I should sum over with the generators. So there's nothing crazy. It's like this expansion, except that this small parameter is replaced by the expansion of F. We happily find out that I have three terms, right? One more order. Okay, plus. So this one says it's 1/2 of this line. I happily copy over. Times almost like itself, but let me name some different index such that they don't get confused. So the reason I'm doing all this naming index differently at the first thing is that Einstein convention is really nice, the repeated indices sum over thing. But if you have one term has three or more than three indices look the same, then it's very confusing. You don't know which one to sum over. So to be safe, at first I always name them different indices, unless they are supposed to be the same. Because all this guy is going to multiply by LAD, because A is free here, D is free here. According to this expansion rule, it should be multiplied by LAD. Okay. So at this point, I haven't done anything brilliant. I'm just copying down that formula 3 times. Okay, is there anything brilliant I'm going to do? Actually, not really. I'm going to expand this guy. You're like, what? Yes, we're going to do it. But remember, we only need a second order, right? So if I was smart, I should already drop this guy. Because this guy's multiplying by this guy, which is going to third order. We don't need it anyway. Okay. It's really A plus B multiplied by B plus C plus D. It can't be that hard. So it's 1/2 epsilon A, epsilon D, alpha, LED. Some 1/2 in front. And then you get epsilon A, epsilon D, beta, LED. And then you get the cross ones, epsilon A, epsilon alpha, epsilon D, beta, LED, and then epsilon D, alpha, epsilon A, beta, LED. I didn't really do anything fancy. I expand the first little part and come up with 4 terms. Okay. Then I'm claiming, look at the expansion, that the LED should be symmetric. See this expansion? This guy should be symmetric. Because I can just switch that, because it's a symmetric here. So if I have any anti-symmetric part, it's going to be 0 anyway. So thus, I can combine these 2 terms. And the half in front says these 2 terms with the half in front should just give me 1 of them. And I'll just rename back to AB. So this captured this term, and the half distributed. Okay. All right. We have left-hand side, we have right-hand side. Now it's the time to compare them. To compare is not hard. I say identity. I say identity. They do not do nothing to me. And I say this guy and this guy is also here. It's this term and that term. What else do I get? I get that line. But see, this guy that has alpha ones canceled by these guys. So this thing in the circle is just this guy. Okay, so you can say, as all equations we hope to have, what we hope to happen to all equations is most things cancel out. What we are left is one term on the left, which is minus epsilon A alpha B beta TATB. And then 2 terms on the right, which is IDBCA. Good, this guy is still here. I need you. And the last term, which is the epsilon A alpha epsilon B beta, this LABC. Right? This is really not a fancy. There are a bunch of things that has crossing over them. I gathered everything that is not crossed on the right, on the other board. I'm just trying to restart. See, if you are on the paper, you don't have to do this. Okay, this guy didn't disappear. This guy didn't disappear. And this guy didn't disappear. Everything else can just cancel out. So not too bad. What do we do next? Remember what we did with the other thing that we see. All the parameters, it should work for all parameters. We should just happily drop the parameter. Well, with one catch, they should be the same parameters. So this is fine. I want to drop this guy, because I don't care. This equation should work for all parameters, so I should just be able to divide them. This guy is fine. This guy is not. But this guy, it's all dummy index. I just want to rename it to be the same. I can rename B to be A, C to be B, A to be C. So A, B, C. Renaming process. After this renaming process, I can even happily get rid of our infinite tesimal parameter as well. And what we're left with is fairly nice looking. And we have this thing. Right? It's not so bad after all. After we go through. Okay. So what can I make out of this? Well, I like D's. And T's okay, they are generators. They probably play some role. But what's this thing? We don't know. But then we can do this. Again, I'm going to rename indexes. I'm just going to switch A and B for shits and giggles. Okay. So now I realize if I just subtract them, this L, A, B, C, I don't care, will drop out anyway. Ta-da, we don't need you. Okay. I'm going to do slightly weird. I'm going to use 2, subtract 1, such that I can get T, A, T, B to be positive. So we get, yes.
So you're using
the
LAB
symmetric,
right?
Right.
So expansion of
yep.
The symmetric function.
Yep.
If we divide by alpha, epsilon, beta, then
yep.
L could be have a non-symmetric part that now is non-vanishing, right? Because only if you multiply it with the symmetric thing, then it becomes vanished.
Yeah, that's true. But when we do the expansion, we realize that in that expansion, the anti-symmetric part doesn't play any role anymore. So when we expand, we just demand LAB is symmetric. And we're going to use that property right now. It says it's symmetric, it disappears. OK, well, this is just a long thing to write. I'll just rename this thing FABC. And I recognize this guy as a commutator. So what we end up getting is a commutator relationship says the generators are actually related. If you do the commutator, it says you always get, you would always get some linear combination of commutators back. So FABCs, they're just numbers. The expansion numbers, so these are all numbers. I'm just expanding the functions of this thing. So this is in a box, so it must be very important. I don't know, it's called extrapolation. Okay, let's see. But, so now we've done first order, second order. We should go to the third order, right? No, instead, we should harvest the fruit. This is the fruit. This is our harvest. Because there is somebody way more diligent and have more energy, probably drink a lot of free coffee, have done it for all the other orders. And they realize as long as this is established, every other order will all work with all sorts of fancy mathematics formula and such. Somebody proved. This is all we need. You can expand to third order if you like. I recommend you do my tutorial instead, not expanding to the third order. But this is all we get. It's like a miracle. You just do this 1 to 2nd order, it just worked. Normal life is a little bit complicated. But I heard somebody says theoretic physicists, they're just doing Gaussian integrals. If it's a Gaussian integral, so we integrate it. If it's not, we'll make it into a Gaussian integral and integrate it. That's a similar idea. But this one holds rigorously, rigorously. We didn't do any approximation. We say, we're not going to do it for third order beyond because they don't yield anything. It's not like I approximate my understanding of the group. No, this helps me completely understand our group. So we're basically done. It says, if you somehow has a group and you have some generators, as long as you give me the structure, how these generators commutator with each other, which is just matrix multiplication as such, then we know everything about this group. So it would be interesting to look at what we know about FABC. So we already achieved the most important result today. FABC, known as the structure constant, they are indeed the structure constant, because if we know them, we know the structure of the group. It's called a fortunately named object. I'm sure you encounter many unfortunately named objects yesterday with Dan. But this one is fortunately named. It really captured the structure constant. And the first thing we could notice is that we just switch an A and a B. It's a commutator, so it's anti-commute. So it's anti-symmetric in A and B. Same, okay, that's a good observation. And then the next step, I don't know, but let's try to take the adjoint of that thing, see what happens. And the reason I want to do this is because I know generators are self-adjoint. So I was hoping to learn something about ABCs. And we know if I take adjoint of the whole thing, it nothing related impacts except the FABCs. Except, recall that in your tutorial zero, you proved this guy. So when you take the adjoint, the order does change though. So although they are self-adjoint, but after you take the adjoint, the order changed. But on the other hand, so this is equal by this adjoint property. On the other hand, that's just the definition of a structure constant. So of course, I can follow the definition and write this guy. So this is by definition of the structure constant. I can do that. And then remember we say the first two index are anti-symmetric, so I can switch and pick up a minus sign. And remember this adjoint doesn't matter because it's self-adjoint. Now if we compare them, we realize these guys are real. That's good. It's already have index ABC, each of them run from 1 to n. So if we can cut half of them, we achieved something. So now we know it's anti-symmetric in the first two index, and it's real. What else? Well, this is commutator. What do we know about a commutator? What do we know about, say, so remember if we have one observer, you will have two things commutator, and next step is always consider three commutator. So, oh, I heard something. I heard a word called Jacobian. Be Jacobi identity. That's right. It actually doesn't have to be generators. It could be anything. Some X mysterious object. Jacobian identity says if you just permute all these things. Okay, I even have to write it that way because otherwise I don't remember. So I first write all the commutators, then I rotate the indices. Okay, you might have seen this. If you haven't, you just expand this commutator, expand this commutator, expand this commutator, get a 6 or 12 terms, and you see they are all like pairwise and has minus sign between them, so they really need to cancel them out. So this is a good thing. Is that as long as you're a commutator, you have a Jacobi identity. And then if further, if they are actually generators, you can use this definition many, many times. You can just say a commutator replaced by that definition, say a commutator do that. Okay, and after you do that, you'll find the Jacobi condition for the structure constant. Okay, if there is an interview, you totally don't have to remember this. But it's some other like cycling process. Okay, so this is what the structure constants satisfy. They satisfy the Jacobi identity. Actually, this identity is very important. It actually goes the other way. It says, as long as you can find this gazillion real numbers that satisfy the anti-symmetric, as long as they satisfy Jacobi condition, that they are structure constants. So not only all structure constants satisfy the Jacobi identity, anything satisfy this condition, you can call them structure constants, you can find a Lie group corresponding to them. So this thing, so now so far we learned something about our structure constants. It's anti-symmetric in two index. It's real. And it satisfies Jacobi identity. So this thing, TA, TB equals I, F, A, B, C, T, C. When I write it again because it's so important. Important things we'll say three times. Okay. This thing has a cute name. It's called the Lie algebra. Of the Lie group. So in general, Lie algebra is basically defined by, so let's talk a little bit about the official definition of Lie algebra, like a little bit of tiny abstract algebras. The definition is really say there is a binary operation. Well, this time it's non-associative. As we've shown, it's non-associative. It satisfies Jacobi identity instead.
Sorry,
yep. Thank you. Yep, because we need to cycle things. Very good. Thank you. Yes, indeed. That should be the case. Okay, very good. So Lie algebra says, as long as you find some non-associative binary operation, which map two things to one thing, such that it's bilinear, so it's linear in here and here. So we have written the property of linear many times. So now I'm just going to tell you, as long as it's bilinear, and then it is satisfied that X, circle X is zero, and X, it's anti-commutative, and it satisfies Jacobi identity. And then you say that as long as you're a commutator, you are automatically a Lie algebra. Okay. So this thing is a Lie algebra. And what we're claiming is if you have a Lie group, you find some generators by infinitesimal expand them, which we're going to do. And then we find all the commutator. Then we claim the only thing we need to do is find representation of this Lie algebra. Then we just exponentiate them back to get the representation of the Lie group. So we are boiling down our daunting task of finding representation of Lie groups down to finding the representation of some generators, satisfy some Lie algebra. Okay. Some progress. So, what? at least one thing is nice, is that actually, remember that we want this representation thing? So all the Lie algebra actually always have a adjoint representation as soon as we write down the structure constants. Why is that so? So let's look at these things and realize the following fact, that TA runs between 1 to n. N is the number of the free parameters, and it's also the number of the generators. But these guys, if I want to find a matrix representation, it must have some other index ij, which the matrix index is ij should run from 1 to m. And of course, now there is a special case. What if n equals m? And this is the case we're going to consider. It's called the adjoint representation. So adjoint representation happens to be a representation that all the Lie algebras will have. We'll see in a second why that is true. And then it's a representation that the dimension of the representation happen to equal to the number of the generator. So this is a special case. Normally it's not. You can have any m by m dimension as long as you can find them. Any representation is a fine representation. Except that this guy is special. It's a special in the sense that it's special in the sense I'll capitalize it, that I can actually write down this matrix immediately using their structure constant. In other words, the structure constants themselves, not only they tell us everything, all the structure about Lie groups. Furthermore, they furnish a representation of the Lie algebras. So as long as you have one Lie algebra, at least we can find one representation, which is the adjoint representation. Okay. Well, you say, why? Well, in order to prove it's indeed the adjoint representation, we only need to do one thing, as the whole class were trying to say this, as long as it's a representation of this Lie algebra, then it is a representation of the Lie group. That's the point of spending so much derivation to come up with this Lie algebra, is that we forget about the Lie group. That's it. Okay, let's prove this. Why that thing is always a representation? Well, we have a Jacobi identity. Okay, very good. Let me check again on my index. I'll write this time since I made a mistake previously. Okay, that should be fine. So we have this Jacobi identity. And then we realize we can just identify this Fs using the definition of the adjoint representation, replace them all by the generators. Okay. So the first guy, well, okay. Let's get that board back. What I'm going to do is just multiply by everything by a bunch of minus i's, because the adjoint definition has this minus i's. Okay. Now it can go up. So now I just say, hey, I see minus I F A B D. And according to my adjoint definition, it's really a matrix TA with BD index, right? Similarly, I can write minus IFCDE as TCDE, right? not a surprise. I'm just using the definition of adjoint representation once. And then this guy, remember these are two matrices, so I can write it as TA times TC with index BE. This is what we do with matrix multiplication, is that the thing, the index they meet, they cancel each other and they get this. Okay, so that's the first term. The second term, okay, the second term, is it the interesting term? Okay, the second term is interesting enough. Let's look at them. Except, I'll do some trick. So minus I, F, B, C, D, I'll do some trick by switch the index and pick up a minus sign. Well, I want to do matrix multiplication and we want to get to the matrix with the same index. So I still like my first matrix to be some guy with index BD. If I don't switch, then end up with matrix with different indices and then I can't make them into a matrix multiplication. So that's the only reason I do it. I switch such that this guy has the same index as before. And the other guy is already good. So minus IF ADE is just TAD. Okay? So the second term altogether is minus TC times TA, and again with BE as the matrices index. Okay, so this is first line is just first term. Second line, you did some anti-symmetric indices and such, but you get that term. And then you had the third term. Third term is interesting. Because there's already something like has a BE over there. So let's look at this guy. This guy is minus IFBDE. Again, I'll have to switch and pick up the minus sign, become DBE. And then we get a TD with index BE. Right? And whatever is in front, we'll leave it to be like that. So now let's put the three terms together. We have TA times TC, BE, and then I have minus TC, TA, BE. And then we have minus I, F, CAD, minus TD BE. And this equals zero according to Jacobi identity. Okay, now I'm happy. They are all matrices, they have the same indices. And who needs to write the indices, right? We have TA, TC, minus TC, TA, plus I, F C A D T D equals zero. Okay? So now I can say, ha, this is nothing but the commutator. Okay. And then I can move the other thing to the other side. All I can just switch the index because that will give me the minus sign. And you realize, huh, that it is my Lie algebra. So miracle happens if you have a struct constants. Well, at least we can find a one representation, which is the adjoint representation. It is a representation because it agrees with my Lie algebra. That's the commutator relationship we have. Okay. And Lie algebra, yeah, here's some confusing notation that we will need the next class is that for Lie algebras, so for Lie group, for example, we say so n. And then for Lie algebra, we write some so n. It's like you want to write it like very squished. It's only visibly different when it's printed on paper. I don't know how to write it differently, but it's just like a squished. Yes, question. The comment.
The good parent had a question. So yes, according to our derivation, because when we derive this Lie algebra, we assume there is a unitary representation. We expand it, and dalla, we come up with this.
Is it always the case that you can find a unitary representation?
You can probably always find a unitary representation. The problem is it might not be finite dimension. So there is, okay, let me say a little bit more about Lie algebra is that our class will focus looking at compact, semi-simple Lie algebra. So this is like the disclaimer. So what we're going to do next? Well, what we're going to do next is talk a little bit about more about the adjoint representation, which I'll talk a little bit more after I made the disclaimer. The disclaimer is that, okay, I lied when I claimed that you know, we can deal with everything. We have some like additive in front. So it's compact and a semi-simple. So compact, it has some really crazy math topology definition that I'll try to figure out how to repeat it such that it doesn't sound Chinese to you. But I'll work on that. But I found a definition that I'm really happy with. It says, that it, remember this Lie group that it depend on this continuous symmetry that has some continuous parameter. And then there is one definition says as long as your parameter is in some finite interval, then it's compact. I find this is really nice because like for SON, for example, all my parameters is chosen between 0 to 2 pi. Means all the SO groups are compact. And we'll indeed encounter a non-compact group this afternoon, which is the Poincaré group, because you have the translations, then they go to infinity, then it's non-compact. And back to your question is that the compact ones, you're always able to find some finite unitary representation. And for non-compact ones, then you have non-compact ones, then you have unitary representation, but it's infinitely dimensional. And then Tipper will tell you something about the spinners in QFT1. That is the non-unitary, but still very interesting representation. Yes?
Is the Lie algebra unique, or can we have different structure constants generating the same Lie group?
That's also a very brilliant question. So structure constant, let's think about where this come from. The structure constant, really, they're just expansion parameters in some F tilde expanded in terms of some parameter. It actually has nothing to do with which representations I choose. So at least we know this doesn't depend on what particular representation you choose, doesn't depend on dimension. So it leaves choose a m by m dimension. Well, this m never show up. You can choose a 2 by 2 representation if you have. You will get this. If you choose 3 by 3, you get this. If 4 by 4, you get this. So this is really quite intrinsically capture the Lie group. But your question is it unique? No, because the problem is you have a bunch of generators. They are a bunch of matrices. Of course, you can choose some linear combination of them. So if you change the base of your generator, then you will get some different structure constant. Actually, we'll encounter that in next class when we learn everything about SU2, right? So when you learn everything SU2, there is a very well-known epsilon APC structure constant. But normally that one is not as interesting as the upper and the lowering operator, and that'll give you some other structure constants. But they are related. They are like related with this similarity transformation or something like that. Like their structure constant is unique in the sense that all the differences you can write down are all because you choose the linear combination of the generators. So it's unique, but it's like an equivalent class. But in that sense, you only have one class. Okay, very good. That's also a very good question, is that they are almost unique. Like but the thing is, since all the other structure constants you can come up with is just linear combination of generators, which means if I'm given one set of the structure constant, I will obtain all the representation I need. I don't need to know the other equivalent classes. They exist, but they're equivalent. So I really only need one set to understand everything about the Lie group, where this Lie algebra has come from. Okay? So come back to our disclaimer that the semi-simple means there's no non-trivial abelian sub algebra. So we understand what's a subgroup, what's subalgebra. Well, it's algebra using the smaller amount of generators, but itself is still algebra. It's like similar definition. And abelian means abelian. Means commutative, right? And it's also not commutative. So for abelian, non-trivial. We mentioned non-trivial because if you only have one generator, okay, it's for course. Like if you only have the one identity, it always have some trivial ones. But you can interpret it with this line for all our purposes as U1. So as long as the Lie algebra we study has no U1 subalgebra, we're fine. Then everything we talked about in the next two lectures would work. So what would work is you gather your matrices, unitary representation, but since we define all the interesting Lie groups we're interested in this class as matrices, so they have the, by definition, matrix representation just means itself. So like you write down the SO3 group, they're defined by 3x3 matrices. So those matrices where they can represent themselves and they can expand them in terms of the real parameters. You find your generators, you calculate the commutators, you find this Lie algebra. And the next class, we talk about one particular Lie algebra, which is SU2. For a whole class, and we'll learn everything else about SU2 in the tutorial. And then the last class, some miracle happens that we say that's enough. That we have some procedures, as long as you know how to deal with SU2, you will know how to do anything, everything else within this, you know, additives. So that is the plan. And since I'm out of time, I'll stop here. Yes?
I just wanted to ask, if you're saying that we're excluding all groups which have a U1 subalgebra,
yep.
For example, you're excluding all the unitary groups which are not special, right? Wait.
Yeah. So basically, we only study SU. And we claim UN must be somehow understandable because UN divided by SUN is U1. Yep. Questions?
Yes.
So, like you said, that if the algebra is non-compact, it may not have a unitary representation.
It wouldn't have a finite. It's actually a theorem, so actually it wouldn't have a finite unitary representation.
So, why is a joint representation can be a finite unitary representation?
Well, the adjoint representation is defined this way. In our case, it is finite. But we did some subtle things. When we write this down, we already assume it's a unitary representation and then write this down. And then you write down. So what we're going to do this afternoon is actually something like this. We'll pretend it exists, a unitary representation, and follow all the steps, expand in terms of generators, and using some intuition about the Poincaré transformation that we know. It's just translations and rotations. And we'll come up with the Poincaré algebra. And it is the Poincaré algebra. And you can write down the adjoint representation, except it's not a unitary. So it does admit an adjoint representation as anything that comes with a structure constant do. But it's not unitary.
Generators is never permission.
Exactly.
So, but so suppose it is permission. So in that case,
it is self-joint, then it is unitary. But it just for all the non-compact Lie algebra people have done, and they look at the adjoint representation. Indeed, they are not Hermitian. Suppose these guys are Hermitian.
Yeah, so
if you are, that's a very good point. Actually, there is such thing that I might or might not prove, but it's definitely in the note. So I'm not sure yet if we're going to do that in class. But there is what you said, if it's a compact, it's a unitary representation, then we can actually prove this is actually completely anti-symmetric, as you pointed out. Very good. Those are very good questions. Any other questions? You are free to go. Any questions?
Have a adjoint representation of an abelian group, then this is always a trivial representation, right? Because all the structural constants are zero.
True.
Yeah. So if we look at the rotations in two dimensions, for example, then we already see, right, we have only one generator, but
yep.
The matrix that we think of intuitively is 2x2 matrix. That can't be.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to.
That's why we say that let's focus on the ones. Doesn't have a U1 sub L for instance,
yeah.
That one. It's kind of silly, but yeah, no, not a billion, non-trivial abelian subalgebra. But on the other hand, the Poincaré does have the abelian subalgebra, but that does have U1s because the R13, but they are very non-trivially connected with the Lorentz algebra as well. So the R13 is semi-direct product into the SO such that it's all entangled. Then it's actually added structures too. So although within the U1 you'll get a bunch of zero, but if you are not a direct product, you take something from the U1 and take something from something else, then you'll get something non-trivial, as you will see this afternoon. Okay, but you are free to go. If you have more questions, you can ask. Now I hope this is clear. If it's not clear, I apologize, but take this box away. This box is what we want to know. And again, this afternoon, we'll tame the beast of Poincaré group.